What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 143 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again by the mythical creature that is the king of the courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
The mythical creature, eh?
Yeah.
I'm stoked, John. Fnatic has made it. They're on their way back to Worlds. As if that was ever a question mark, it is now confirmed.
Oh, I guess you'll be seeing Cloud9 there, too, because we punched our ticket as well. Almost the same way you guys did.
I was just going to say that. A very, very similar way between these two orgs.
All right, Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're at it, on Twitter, why not give your favorite host, or your least favorite host, probably, a follow on Twitter as well. Those beautiful handles, if you're watching here live on Twitch, will be below those mugshots you're currently staring at. And if you are listening to the podcast later on down the road, they'll be in the show notes for you below. Nation, while you're at it, why not leave us a review? Leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice. We're now available on Spotify, Stitcher, as well as iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. Reviews go a long way to helping us grow the show and reach new listeners. When you have a moment, we would be so appreciative if you took some time out of your day to leave us a review. Please and thank you. Nation, the Overwatch playoffs have graced us with our two finalists for Season 2 after a thrilling weekend of semifinal matchups. Philadelphia, you're on the clock. They're coming to you, East Coast. I expect a great turnout in Philadelphia. Joey, aside from our personal road trip to Philadelphia for the Overwatch finals, what else are we talking about this week on episode 143?
Overwatch League finals are a big one, John, but that is not all. We're talking about a big new esports program coming up in Virginia. We're also talking about the Call of Duty franchise teams. We have 12 announced so far. They're aiming for 10 to 14. It sounds like 12 is at least the magic number for now. In addition to that, esports in the Olympics or just outside the Olympics, and League of Legends Worlds coming up with all teams confirmed now.
All right. So once again, a packed episode of amazing gaming and esports news. Joey, I know I'm going to need a little bit of assistance. I'm a little tired today, so I'm going to need something that has a little more of an oomph for this episode, I feel like. So, Joey, it is time for that time-honored tradition passed down from generation to generation. And, of course, I mean episode to episode. Of course, I am talking about the drink of choice. Joey, I need your beverage for episode 143.
John, I am drinking a Stormio coffee from Nespresso.
Hey, what in the world is that?
Storm Dragon Stormio. I believe it's like Guatemalan beans, maybe Guatemalan and Nicaraguan coffee beans. I was exhausted today, and I was like, I'm not going to get a coffee at 3 p.m. I'll wait till I get home. I have one now. I was going to put some liquor in it. I was looking at some Bailey's or Kahlua, but it did not make it in there before I got back to the seat. So we're going straight up coffee.
I mean, we all make bad life decisions, Joey. So Nation, I'm going to go ahead and... Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
There you go. So if you're thinking that's a beer, you're incredibly wrong. I, too, am on the struggle bus this Monday after a very long weekend. A long but short weekend, it feels like. But on Friday afternoon, on my way home from work, I stopped by the local grocery market, if you will, and found this thing that screamed mystery flavor on it, which, of course, I like a good challenge. So apparently Mountain Dew puts out mystery flavors now. I didn't realize this. So this is the Mountain Dew mystery flavor for 2019 called Voodoo. It's actually not bad. This is like my fourth one I've had out of the 12-pack, which is pretty good considering how much I drink soda. Four since Friday is a really good streak here for me. But it's Mountain Dew, and if you know Mountain Dew, you know it's chock full of caffeine. So I will be on the hype train. I'll be jumping off that struggle bus here momentarily while I enjoy my beautiful mystery flavor Mountain Dew.
Okay, so wait a minute. You can't just drop words like mystery and not, like, solve a little bit for us here. Like, give me some flavors. What do we got?
So here's my problem. The only thing that it tastes... So I let my coworkers try it at work today, and they said it tastes like a Starburst. And I guess I can understand that. To me, no one's going to get this reference, and I apologize ahead of time. If you are familiar with those small little, like, yogurt drinks from the Asian regions of the world... mainly South Korea is where I was exposed to it when I grew up there. That's what it honestly tastes like. It tastes like a carbonated version of that cool little yogurt drink. And I freaking love it. It brings back so many memories. But it tastes freaking fantastic, and I wish they would keep this around. This is right up there with Baja Blast for Mountain Dew for me. The flavor is incredible.
But no, like, fruit flavor or anything like that? You can't compare it to anything? You're giving me Asian yogurt?
Yeah. Maybe maybe a combination. So if I went on Starburst route, like my coworker said, I'd probably say it's a mixture of strawberry and cherry Starburst is kind of what it tastes like. It's weird. It's clear. It's clear like Sprite. So, kids, if you're listening and your parents are one of those parents that say, oh, you can't have any dark sodas, you can only have clear sodas, this is a great loophole. Not only does it have caffeine, but it has a ton of sugar in it, too. Trick your parents. I guarantee you they're not paying attention. Great stuff. Joey, with that, we have our beverages. It is time to get right into gaming and e-sports news. Let's go.
Kicking things off with the Overwatch League, the Vancouver Titans have added Anthony Morocco, I believe he was from Cavs Legion in the NBA 2K League, if I remember correctly, as their new Director of Business Operations. I like this move a lot. I mean, you're looking at the Overwatch League, it's one of the biggest franchise leagues as far as esports goes. You're coming over from the sports world versus esports world with the NBA 2K League, where they dipped a bit into the NBA, but as well into the esports side of things. I think Anthony's a great job, or a great person for the job here.
Yeah, and this is another jump that we're seeing from the NBA 2K League into the Overwatch scene. Right here locally in Washington, D.C. also, we saw that kind of the same move with Grant Parangipe moving from Wizards DG over to the Washington Justice. NBA 2K League has a lot of great talent on the management side there, a lot of great history and experience there with a lot of their employees. So it's not a surprise here to see the next step in that evolution for a lot of these people's job is to make that jump into Overwatch League. So really, really great opportunity here for Anthony.
Yeah, and it's nice to see someone like that go to Endemic Esports as well. It's someone taking the jump from a sports-based esport to a more traditional esport, if you want to say so. So I really like seeing that introversion between the two. And I'd like to see it go the opposite way as well, to see some more people who are in Endemic Esports move over to something like 2K League to other sport-based leagues as well. CSGO, Fnatic, we talked about their roster last week. We're talking about it again this week. They have brought in two players, and it is Flusha and Golden. Golden will be on loan from C9 through the end of 2019. John, what are your thoughts on this roster? We're looking at Fnatic. We're looking at a revamped roster after they lost their legacy status, but it's a revamped roster with two players that they failed to play well with before. So this is a team, this group of five, I think it was two more minor tournaments, but then they never really made it to a major level. Now they're back. They have a different coach, but the five players have played on this squad before, and they've shown they're not as good as a Team Liquid, not as good as an Astralis. They haven't really competed. They've been to majors, but they haven't done that well at majors. So as individual players, they're very talented, but as a team of five, they seem very unproven. So I'm kind of surprised to see two players back on the same squad.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised there. I'm right there with you, Joey. The big question here is, that time away from Fnatic, did they learn anything? Did they grow? You can make an argument, okay, you know, they play with different organizations. You had Golden on Cloud9, which, again, this goes to prove that the Cloud9 Fnatic bromance relationship that they have is second to none anywhere in the internet. But that's the big question, is how much did they really improve? Are they really that much different? Because that would be my biggest question mark, Joe. You being a big Fnatic fan, you know, you see this move and you're like, wait a minute, why are we going back to these players that struggled with the same set of five players all together as a team? What changed? What's different? And as far as I'm concerned, not much has changed. The game hasn't changed. The meta hasn't changed. Not much has changed in that scene, but yet you're willing to give these players a second try. So you're really banking on the fact that they grew, that they learned from their time away from Fnatic before they got brought back. But, I mean, how much time can you really have? How much time has really passed? It hasn't been that long. It hasn't been like 3, 4, 5 years. How much growth can these two players really have gotten before their return to Fnatic?
Right, and that's the part I'm curious about as well. I feel like they've grown as people. I feel like one of the reasons they did not succeed with Fnatic to a high level before was because of the attitude clashes. Now you're coming in with new personalities. You've seen how other like organizations run. Like Golden's been on C9. Golden's been with NiP. Flusha was on C9. So they have an idea at least of how one or two other organizations work between this time. I'm curious to see them bring that into the fold. Did they learn enough about team cooperation? Or are we coming back to the same thing where Golden makes in-game calls and the team sometimes follows them? So unless there's clear leadership, I don't think the old Fnatic style of we're just that good that we can just body people is going to work in today's meta. I feel like having a good shot caller, and I think Golden has that potential, but he really needs the buy-in of these veteran players, the JW, the Crims, the Flesha. If they don't buy into a shot caller, I don't see this team succeeding. I do like the idea of a new coach above them, though. With that being said, this was the coach who was the team manager when they were here previously. So he was there. He was able to work with them as team players and as members, but they still didn't succeed under him in that role. I'm hoping that him as a team manager moving to a coaching role is hopefully going to bring something different to the table. Again, there's a lot of hopefully here. As a Fnatic fan, I really hope this works, and I love the idea of bringing these guys back because I like their personalities. But overall, as a team looking to excel to the next level, I don't know if they quite took a step forward. I think it was more a step to the side for me.
Yeah, and we talk about it all the time here on this show about communication, how key it is, especially to, you know, in esports. We saw TSM field a League of Legends team consistent of all-stars, but the one thing they failed to do was communicate. They had too many shot callers. They refused to work together as a team and ultimately doomed them as an all-star perennial team in the League of Legends scene. Same thing here. If you can't communicate, if you can't listen to a shot caller, if you can't act as a team, there's no hope. It's tough. It's really tough to get over that hurdle when you have five players on five different pages.
Right, and especially when you look at shooters, I don't want to spend too much more time on this, but at least from like the FPS perspective, it's so good to have one shot caller. You want everyone calling out what they're seeing, but you want one person making those clear-cut decisions and the rest of the group following it. I feel like that's been the issue with Fnatic, at least these last couple generations of the CSGO team. If they can get that back together, if they follow Golden, if they follow JW, whoever the shot caller is going to be, then I think this team has the skill potential, the mechanics at least, to get things done. But they need to follow calls. They can't just all be doing their own thing. Dota 2, Team Liquid's Dota 2 team has disbanded from the TL brand. The team is sticking together, though. They are just looking to build their own organization. They were the winners of the International 7 and runners-up of this recent International 9. John, this is one hell of a good team. This Team Liquid team has been around the block. They've shown they're some of the best that Dota has to offer. We're looking at GH, Kuroki, Mind Control, Miracle, and W33, or Wii. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. But really talented players. We've seen players go down this route before, though, where they leave a big, well-known organization like Team Liquid, and they try to make their own. A lot of the reason for doing it is you already have the acclaim. You can build upon what you've already made as a foundation of fame. You can also cut more of the prize pool, really, for these teams that are used to winning. You can say, hey, I don't have to give any weight to the organization or to coaches or whoever. So there's pluses and minuses, but I don't feel like many of these teams succeed in the long run.
Yeah, and Dota's kind of a weird scene because we see this time and time again, especially in the Western Hemisphere, where organizations don't really pay attention to Dota too much. They don't feel the team. And then the international comes around and they buy some small team that qualified, that has the skill, and they slap their name on it and they perform well, and then they end up dropping the roster or they end up selling the team to a different organization. It's really weird the amount of turnover we see in the Dota scene. So while it's not surprising to hear that they disbanded from Team Liquid, it is kind of surprising that a roster this good doesn't want to be under a mega name like Team Liquid, as like the brand that they've built themselves up to be in the past several years. I would personally think being under that Team Liquid name would have a lot of benefit for them. But then again, Joey, you are correct there. They are the International 7 winners and they're runners up. That's a lot of rep.
Prestige.
Yeah, prestige in the Dota scene. So it's a good opportunity for them, you know, and it's probably the best time to make that move. They want to start their own organization. Kudos to Team Liquid for being willing to let them walk, I guess. But it's not surprising to see this in the Dota scene.
Right. And it's somewhat comparable. I don't think you can draw a full comparison, but it kind of reminds me of what we saw with Tfue and FaZe as well. I mean, you're looking at players who have kind of reached the height of what they can with an organization, at least from a growth perspective. I mean, Dota 2, they've made their name in Dota 2. They're as popular as it gets in Dota 2. And Dota 2 is not really drawing that many people from League of Legends or Heroes of the Storm. Well, Heroes of the Storm is a different case nowadays. But MOBAs in general, there isn't that much crossover. So for me, I think they're seeing this as we've hit the height. We want more of the money cut. We want more of our own popularity. We want to build something of our own. So I think it's great. I think it's an awesome thing for them to do. At the same point, you do cut out a lot. they might not get more growth from Team Liquid, but you're cutting out those jerseys. You're cutting out sponsor potential. Like, there's a lot of different things from their angle that could also bring more money, like the sponsors, like the jerseys, like the different sales they can offer. And that's something this new organization is really going to have to fund on their own. I mean, when you're runners up at the TI, you have a lot of money coming in to make this organization potentially if the players pull it together. At the same point, I mean, the biggest thing for me, John, is you're also losing the lawyers. I mean, something like TL has a strong lawyer set up, and these people have the money to get it all set up, but there's going to be a lot of groundwork in building your own organization, especially an esports organization where there's more and more eyes coming on it as well.
Yeah, and really not to like undercut these players at all, but let's be real here. If you take a look at the average age of Dota players in the international, they're not exactly of age to be running a multi-million dollar organization. Now, not saying they can't do it. I'm just saying there is a lot of... it's a very thin line between profit and you know, spending money and not making a return on your investment here. In esports, still to this day, it's a very fine line. A lot of the organizations that have been around for over a decade will tell you that even though, you know, they're multi-million dollar organizations, they still have to be wary about what they decide to invest in. The scene is still growing. It's a very boom or bust scene still. And now you're going to have these kids, these young adults, these incredibly young adults trying to run an organization. Now, if they focus just on Dota, I think they'll be successful. But how many one team, one esport organizations are out there that make a ton of money? I can't really think of any off the top of my head. It's really multi-title organizations. It's the brand. You're selling almost a lifestyle to kind of steal off of 100 Thieves and what they're trying to sell. It's more of a lifestyle than it is an esports organization you just root for. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with this. I'm rooting for them. I want them to be successful. They've proven they're on the player side that they can do it. Now they need to prove it on the business side. This is a gutsy call, but the reward is possibly there. It's a big boom or bust move here.
Well, if you're making bets, I am betting on them to fail, John. I hope they do well, just like you do, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah,
I don't think there's such a thing as one team esports anymore. With the growth, with the money coming in, with everything going on, I just don't think it's going to work. So, okay, they establish themselves as Dota 2 organization. They continue to be successful in Dota 2, and then they look to expand into League of Legends, into CSGO, wherever they end up going. Then you're looking at something completely different. You are players that have played in esports. Yes, there's a number of us out there. At the same point, these are completely different. Like, you look at League of Legends, there's franchising. Overwatch League, there's franchising. You have to pay tons of money up front to get in there. And then these guys might not even know that much about the scene. I would argue they probably know the basics of League of Legends, MOBA to MOBA. They might dabble with some Overwatch here and there, maybe even Rocket League. But when it comes down to it, the seasonal format of Dota is very different from anything else. I would say maybe CSGO is your most comparable because there's major tournaments that lead to other stuff down the line, depending on the league. But something like League of Legends and Overwatch, the franchising is just a whole nother layer. So like you said, John, these guys are young. These guys are, they're entrepreneurial. I'll give them that. I think they're also a little ballsy with this move. It could be a huge payoff, but it could also fall very short. Moving on to an organization that's really made their name in one title, and that is Sentinels, home of the world's most recent Fortnite World Championship, with Bugha winning that one. They've added Zypha to their brand as well. Again, I don't follow Fortnite too much. I can't tell you much about Zypha, but an organization that has built up their reputation on a game knows their way around that game. I have a feeling this is going to be a good signing. Partnerships. Rowan University here in Virginia is set to launch an esports program in partnership with Nerd Street Gamers. Nerd Street will also invest over $1 million to build a 7,500 square foot gaming facility on Rowan Boulevard. John, this is really big for collegiate esports and really big for collegiate esports, particularly in the Mid-Atlantic region.
Yeah, it's absolutely massive. And Nerd Street Great Gamers have really started to make, well, not started to make, but have really made a name for themselves. I believe they have a partnership, I believe, with Emmanuel Sanders of the Denver Broncos wide receiver, which is, you know, personally, as a Denver Bronco fan, to me, that's massive. It's such a great brand. And they've been doing things all over the country, up and down the East Coast, right here in the Northern Virginia region as well. They're incredibly active in the scene here. And now taking that next step into collegiate esports. I think it's absolutely fantastic. $1 million for a 7,500 square foot esport facility. Joey, I can't really think of an esport facility on the East Coast that's 75,000 square feet. 75,000. 7,500. Math is difficult today. Square feet on a college campus anywhere up and down the East Coast. Now, please fact check me if I'm wrong. That's a complete assumption. I have no research on that whatsoever, but none come to mind. Yeah, there's a lot of esport teams out there for colleges. A lot of them are clubs, some are varsity, but I don't think any of them have invested that kind of money into a facility for gaming yet. So that's absolutely huge for Ronan, and it's great for Nerd Street Gaming.
Right. I can't think of a collegiate one off the top of my head, but I think it's Team Envy has a big headquarters down in like North Carolina or South Carolina, which is a big facility. But as far as college campuses, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, college campuses, there's nothing like that to my knowledge, at least on the East Coast. I think this is going to be a really big move, not only for collegiate esports, but like John and I said, the Mid-Atlantic region. You're looking at one of the biggest areas for esports. Washington, D.C. is thriving right now. Atlanta, just south of here. You have New York, just north of here. This is just such a very good area to build up esports. And the collegiate level is the next big level. You're watching high schools develop into that collegiate esports program. And then from there, another pathway to professional play. This is going to be really big. Nerd Street does a great job with everything they've done so far. I know they partnered up with our friends at the Game Gym as well for summer camps this past summer. I'm excited to see how this ends up. I think it's going to be a beautiful facility. In other news, Rainbow Six Siege players can now purchase new pro team bundles for each of the 14 teams that are part of the Pilot Phase 2 program. Nothing we really need to touch too much on here, John. We've talked about it before. This is revenue sharing. We love the fact that Rainbow Siege has jumped into it. It's a lot bigger in other areas. Like, you look at League of Legends, Overwatch, like we said before, franchising, there's a lot more revenue sharing involved with that. But for other esports that are looking to jump into it, Dota 2 has done it with the prize pool for the international. Rainbow Six is doing it with skin sales and icon sales. And I can't think of the little thing, but the little dangle things that hang off your gun that look like little charms. They might be called charms.
the little dangle things. I absolutely love how descriptive you are on that.
I think they're called charms. Not 100% sure, but they are hanging off my guns when I do load that game up. I think this is a great move. Again, it's phase two, so we're seeing the growth of a successful phase one. This is another way for players who follow the esports scene to say, hey, I want to support my organization. I want to support my team, both in-game with a skin or a charm or whatever you call it, as well as monetarily. This is a great way to do it. I love to see Rainbow Six continue on this way, and I hope we have a phase three coming soon. Call of Duty. We have 12 franchise teams, John. There's a few different things to hit on this one, but we'll start by listing the teams out. We have Atlanta. We have Chicago, Dallas, Florida, London, LA times two. So two Los Angeles teams once again for this league. Minnesota, New York, Paris, Seattle, and Toronto. What are your thoughts overall of the field we have so far? It could end at 12. There's rumors that it might go to 14. But what are your thoughts on the cities we have so far?
Two teams in Europe. So very NA heavy again. You have one team in Canada. I'd like to see more in Canada. Nothing really surprising here. Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, Florida, because God forbid we say Orlando or Miami or Tampa Bay. You know, let's group them all together. Twitch chat, yes, I would love to see Washington, D.C. get a team. I don't think it's going to happen, at least in the first go-around, maybe in the second go-around, and maybe in the second season. But the cities aren't surprising. It's just really not surprising. I can't think of anything else. This is honestly not surprising. It's very NA heavy. I want to see more of an international feel. I want to see more European teams. I want to see some Asian teams thrown in there as well. But who knows? They are asking a lot of money to jump into the Call of Duty franchise, the franchise Call of Duty League. So it's a lot of wait and see. We're still waiting to see what the return on investment from the Overwatch League is like for these teams as well. Again, regional based esport leagues is still fairly new. We're in its second year, really, of this experiment. Even if you include the NBA 2K League, you know, they all play in New York. There is no homestand weekend like the Overwatch League is doing in Season 3. So it is still a little bit of an experiment, and we're not sure how local markets are going to turn out for this. So it's kind of interesting to see The teams that did buy in early, it's not surprising that the cities that did, but I think some of the other cities I want to see in there are kind of doing that wait and see mentality here.
So I might be wrong on this. I don't see a big Asian appeal for Call of Duty either, to be completely honest. When I look at the games being played most in Asia, Call of Duty is not really one of them. Correct me if I'm wrong, chat, but I've never seen it on like a top 10 chart. So I really don't know if this league will succeed in Asia as we've seen the Overwatch League succeed, particularly China. You look at all the viewers China brings in, I don't know if Call of Duty League is going to hit those same numbers, especially when they rotate titles as much as they have in the past. Every 2 to 3 years or whatever, I think it's 1 to 2 years for most of these titles, there's just so much turnover. So if you're looking at changing the title out every 2 years and then you're not pulling in the Asian audience, I think there's just still a lot of question marks surrounding this league. Hitting on some of these cities, though, John, I'm curious your thoughts on this. So the Chicago spot is actually owned by NRG, and over in the Overwatch League, they own the San Francisco spot. What are your thoughts on a team or an organization buying two different cities instead of sticking with the same one, whether that be the league's decision or the Orcs' decision?
I don't think it's bad. I think that's something that, you know, Nadeshot brought up in his video in regards to Call of Duty and why 100 Thieves isn't jumping into it. They don't want to be tied down to one specific city. They don't want to plant their flag and say 100 Thieves represents this city and everything that we do. I feel like this is NRG kind of making that statement saying, hey, look, yeah, we have a San Francisco-based Overwatch team, but we have a Chicago-based Call of Duty team, trying to still show they have that international reach, that diversity and the willingness to go anywhere in the country that they can go to get a spot. And also, you know, it's two different markets. You may be able to dabble in some things in Call of Duty that you can't do in Overwatch. Granted, it's essentially old Blizzard Activision anyway. You know, you may be able to do some things differently in these two leagues. Maybe you're going to have to kind of compete against yourself in regards of media exposure. Now you have two different markets. You can kind of expand your footprint that way. I don't know. I personally think it's a good move. I think it's smart not planting your flag in just one city.
So from an organizational perspective, I think you can argue both ways. From a league perspective as well, though, I'm kind of curious. I don't know. It's a very interesting move because you look at something like Chicago, it's very far away from San Francisco. From a league perspective, if you're trying to cross promote the Overwatch League and CWL, it's not going to be a super clean move because a lot of these teams and organizations actually do share the same city. Like Dallas, I believe, is the same owner of Florida. London is not. London is by Rekt Global, who is with Rogue, I believe. They own the London spot here for CWL, while Cloud9 owns it in the Overwatch League. And then looking at a few of the other cities, Los Angeles, I think, kept the same ownership. New York, I did it, I believe, as well. Same with Paris. Seattle is actually the Vancouver Titans, if I remember correctly. So they're in the same general market, at least. They're up in that same region. They're hitting the U.S. and Canada, which I think is a really smart move for them to own that whole region. I think the biggest question mark for me here more than anything is really the Chicago-San Francisco move. You're hitting two different markets, which could have its advantages. At the same point, like if I want to do a meet and greet with both teams, do I do it in Chicago? Do I do it in San Francisco? Do I do it in both cities? I mean, it could really expand the cost, and especially if these two leagues being done by the same ownership group, like you look at Activision, they're over the Overwatch League and Call of Duty. What if they ended up planning trips to benefit some of these teams where they could fly, say, Los Angeles, all the Los Angeles teams go to Atlanta for the weekend for both Call of Duty and Overwatch League if they run during the same time? Well, then you have the disadvantage because you're flying a team from Chicago and a team from San Francisco. So there's a whole bunch of pros and cons to this. I'm curious to see how it does pay out for San Francisco or, NRG. How it's going to end up looking in the long term for them. I know, I just labeled it by the city. See, we're already messing things up. But yeah, I'm very curious to see how this all goes. With that being said, NRG does own that Chicago spot, and they brought on Hector Hex Rodriguez as their new co-CEO. I think this is a solid move overall. I think my bigger question marks more than moves in general for rosters or leadership at the moment is the fact that I'm curious about the longevity of Call of Duty, not as a franchise, but as an individual title. We've mentioned it over and over, so we don't need to dive more into it, John. But I'm just very curious how the turnover works between titles with Call of Duty if they do end up changing within the league. Whew, Call of Duty gets me going every time. The 500K Intel World Open will bring Rocket League and Street Fighter V to Tokyo 2020 as an Olympics tie-in. There's going to be $250,000 on the line for each of these tournaments, $500,000 total. And Intel and the IOC, that is the International Olympic Committee, in partnership with Psyonix and Epic Games and Capcom, will host the World Open Finals at Tokyo's Zepp Diver City venue from July 22nd to the 24th. Again, this is happening coinciding with the Olympics. So as it's ending on the 24th, the Olympics will be beginning. So esports didn't quite make it into the Olympics. Both of us were kind of not wanting it to. We wanted it to do its own thing. At the same point, it looks like the IOC has bought on as almost like a prelude to the Olympics themselves.
Yeah, and really this is as close as we're going to get to esports in the Olympics at this point in time. Any kind of co-event with the Olympics is going to be good for esports. We saw it got, you know, esports got tied in with the Asian Games, which is great. I think that's a step in the right direction. We're going to see a bigger push as the Olympics continues to grow, tries to remain relevant, trying to get that next generation of fans to buy in into the every 4 year hype. That's something that traditional sports is still struggling with, is how do you connect with the younger generation when the younger generation wants esports? They want gaming, they want streaming abilities on their devices, on their computer. That's where the younger generations are. Millennials, Generation Z, or whatever in the world we want to call the generation after millennials. That's where those generations are. How are you going to be able to attract them to watch this, you know, event? The fact that it's every 4 years, you know, it may stir up some hype, but it's not really going to grab people. If you make kind of like a World Cup of esports and you throw that in the Olympics where like you get to represent your country in a certain title, you know, kind of build some kind of like, you know, country pride that way through the Olympics. Like, we see how successful that is with the Overwatch World Cup. We see how successful it is in other titles where we have that World Cup's quality or style of tournament. We see it in FIFA all the time also. You know, EMLS is still fairly new in North America, but the winner from EMLS got to go on to the FIFA World Cup, E-World Cup, pardon me, if you will. And they represented America. And there was a lot of hype around that. So I feel like that's a step in the right direction. And I really want to see esports get integrated why not do both? Why not have, you know, a hockey esport title in the Winter Olympics and, you know, FIFA and NBA 2K and you know, summery titles in the Summer Olympics? Why not have it up there with everything else that goes on in the Olympics?
I think you keep it separate like we talked about last time. I think the idea of the Olympics is just very physically active, and I think it's a good idea to do a similar format, but I think you almost keep them separate, and I actually think that's what we're seeing the Olympics do here. It could be them testing the waters about adding it into the Olympics, but I think this might be something new they're going to develop more and more with the Intel World Open. This could become a prelude to the Olympics, similar to how we see like the Paralympics follow the Olympics. Maybe we see the esports version lead up to the Olympics. It's almost like a prelude, or a sequel if they throw it afterwards, but I think that's pretty much set for the Paralympics. So for me, I like this move a lot, especially if we see the two separated. If you keep them separate, I don't think you ever hit that sports esports argument. It becomes two different international competitions that happen every 2 to 4 years, where one is based on esports, one is based on sports. I think that's the cleaner way to attract all audiences and help both open to one another. So that's my thoughts. We'll follow that. Again, it's about a year away at this point, but we will bring that to you next July, so look forward to that. Gears 5 has become the first AAA title to be awarded a perfect 6 out of 6 from Can I Play That, a website that rates accessibility in gaming for deaf players. John, just more on this, I think Microsoft is showing that they are committed to this route. We saw it with the, I just forgot the name of it, the really cool controller they invented for accessibility last year. I can't think of the name of it.
The adaptive controller?
The adaptive controller. Ding, ding, ding. Look at you, Microsoft fan already.
Ooh!
So really good stuff here. They're helping kids with different disabilities or adults with different disabilities. Military veterans have been able to use that controller, and now they're taking it a step further, helping out deaf gamers as well, with now the first AAA title that is deaf. I don't know what you'd say. What is that? Deaf? I can't think of the word.
Friendly?
Friendly. Yeah, friendly is exactly what I'm looking for. Deaf friendly. So I think this is a really good move, and the person who wrote the article went through everything about how the subtitles are really well done. They show the noises being made as well as the text being stated. So I'm really happy with this. We've seen a lot of different companies go one route or another with things like this, and they never really 100% follow through. To me, it's just comforting to see that Microsoft is taking this to another step. They're going beyond the adaptive controller and continue to build this direction.
Yeah, and that's one thing I will never knock Microsoft for, is their commitment to disabled gamers. They are fully focused on making gaming for everyone, truly, not just in a motto, but they're putting that motto to work. They're actually making a difference here, asking their studios, hey, we need to create games, that are better for, players that are colorblind, that are deaf, that, may have, missing limbs if they're military veterans, or maybe they were born with missing limbs. There's so many disabilities out there that affect a lot of people that want to play video games, and they just, for whatever reason, it's 2019 and we're just now starting to really take a bigger look at this idea of making gaming for everyone. It's been talked about for years, but now Microsoft is really putting their money where their mouth is, and they're really helping develop games and controllers to ensure that gaming can be for everyone. I want to see more studios do this. I want to see more developers do this. I want to see more console creators. I want to see Nintendo. I want to see Sony. You name it. If Sega ever gets back into the game, I want to see Sega do it. I want to see everyone start to reach out to gamers of every kind in the world to help make gaming truly for everyone, because it's so beneficial for people. It's a great outlet for being social, meeting new people, having that camaraderie, working on communication. Every benefit that you can think of that traditional sports has, gaming has that also. You are able to do all that. Teamwork, communication, it's great. And the more accessible we can make gaming, the better.
When everyone plays, we all win. It really is. And gaming in general is one of those forms of entertainment, similar to music, similar to movies, that really spans every generation as well. So this is something that older people can get into, that younger people, children, just because everything is so accessible between consoles, PC, mobile gaming nowadays, and very similar for disabled gamers as well. There are so many different tools out there now, whether it be the adaptive controller, whether it be a new version of colorblind gameplay coloration, whether it be now we're seeing this stuff with the deaf, with the text titles. So there's just so many different ways to do this and be innovative about it. I love the fact that it's now making its way to AAA games. And I think that's the biggest thing here. Not only that Microsoft is stuck with it, but the fact that it is making its way into AAAs. So it's not just these little indie developers that care about certain things, that they want to really hit niche markets. It's about Microsoft, a giant corporation, saying, hey, this is one of our biggest games in this whole generation. We are going to make it accessible to everyone, whether you're deaf, whether you're blind, whether you're old, whether you're young. They're doing everything they can to make it out there, and to see it get a really high score on a deaf rating, I think, is really good. Again, if you guys want to read that full rating, you can find it at Can I Play That? It's a really good review. Absolutely love it, and I'm very happy that Microsoft has went in this direction. Apple Arcade. John, I did not get to see the Apple announcement because I was in a meeting at the time, but I know you have your thoughts on the Apple Arcade. It's set to launch on September 19th at a cost of $5 a month per family subscription. What are your overall thoughts on it after hearing the presentation?
If I'm being honest, I think it's cool. I think that for $4.99, $5, let's go ahead and round up, $4.99 a month, you get access to some really cool titles. You get access to some really cool games that generally you have to pay, $1.99, maybe $2.99 for, but you get it in this subscription-based package. And I think it's great if you're a mobile gamer. Joey, you know me. I download a mobile game, I play it for a week, and then I forget about it for 4 months, and then I'm like, oh, wait, I still have it on my phone. I'm going to delete it now. For me, it doesn't appeal to me. But for the mobile gamer out there, it is such a great deal. $5 a month for some really quality mobile games out there. Apple showcased a lot of really cool titles coming out for mobile gaming that weren't necessarily said to be a part of the $4.99 package. But I would imagine if you are a sub to that $4.99, to that Apple Arcade, that you get some kind of discount applied if you have to purchase a full-priced game. That's complete speculation. There's nothing backed up there. But I would imagine that Apple would do that if you're dedicating $5 a month to mobile gaming. If you're a diehard mobile gamer, this is definitely for you. Kids, talk to your parents about it. $5 a month for almost unlimited gaming that's included in the arcade. I think it's going to launch with almost over 400 or 500 games. There's a lot of games out there for you to try if you're a mobile gamer. That's not just for your iPhone. That's your iPad, your Mac, your Apple TV. You can play games on all of those from the App Store. So there's a lot of possibility here for the Apple Arcade going forward. For me, doesn't speak well to me, but for mobile gamers, if you're a diehard gamer, it is awesome. And if you're an iPhone holder, if you're in the Apple ecosphere, go for it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Xbox Game Pass for mobile. I mean, that's practically what this is. This is the Xbox Game Pass model that we see on Xbox and on PC, now moved over to mobile. Kudos to Apple for jumping on it, though. That's a really, really smart move for them before Microsoft really pushes out all this iCloud or xCloud stuff. Once that comes out, I think this market becomes a lot more competitive. But Apple getting in there early, they already have a giant footprint in the mobile system. And for the price, John, this is really good. Not only is it $5, but it's per family plan. And I want to say the Apple family can include like up to 7 members, maybe even 10, if I remember correctly. So it's a decent portion. And if I'm understanding this correctly, this can be used for both the mobile phone and the iPad. Is that correct?
Yes.
So look at that. You can get almost like 7 to 10 people somewhere in that range. Maybe it's 5. I don't remember. But it's at least 5 onto everything mobile phone wise and iPad wise. So to me, if you're a big mobile gaming family or you have a group of friends that plays a lot of mobile games, this could be one hell of a deal. A really, really a big, huge discount because $5 really is not bad for an individual person to buy the subscription. Putting it onto the family plan makes it look even more attractive. With that being said, as a mobile gamer myself, I have time for one or two games here and there. 250 or whatever John said it's going to include sounds like a whole hell of a lot of games. So unless I'm doing mobile app reviews or unless I have way too much time on my hands, I don't know if this is quite for me either. It really depends on the titles, though. If I'm going to end up paying $5 for a title or $3.99 or whatever for a new mobile gaming title, as mobile gaming graphics get better and better, maybe this deal becomes me. Like if it includes like Fire Emblem Heroes or Clash of Clans, which is free, but you know what I mean? Like those higher level titles, if we see some of those that have a price tag on them included in this service that I think I'll play regularly, then this might be the way to go. At the same point, I'm like you, John, I don't know if this is quite the deal for me, but I think a lot of people will buy into it.
Now, here's my question. Would you buy it if it means that those games that you already played that are free, if those games are included and now provide you an ad-free experience?
See, that's another key. Ad-free experience is big. A lot of people do like a one-time payment right now, like a one-time payment of $5.99 and you have no more ads for your lifetime. But if you do something like this and that's included, that's a lot more attractive. The other thing, and God, I hope we don't go this way for mobile gaming, but you look at Game Pass, one of the biggest draws to Game Pass is one, you're trying new games that you normally wouldn't, which this definitely has. But the other big draw is all the DLC is included for free for a lot of these games. I really hope we don't go the route of mobile DLC.
Why not?
Because that scares me. Could you imagine people throwing even more money at mobile? Like, oh, if you can download this texture pack for $5. So then maybe that pushes more people to the subscription. At the same point, I'm glad that most DLC is going free for gaming nowadays. I don't really want to see more premiums on it. That to me just gets scary. I mean, I can see a lot of nickel and diming come the mobile version. But I mean, you already have that in a sense. Like so many games are free to play, but then pay to win.
Yeah.
You look at Clash of Clans, Clash Royale, even Gears Pop. There's a whole bunch of games out there where, hey, you spend a little bit of money of our currency and you can open 3 more chests this week. Like, okay, thank you, sir. I will pay a little bit here and there maybe. But then you have people who pay tons and tons of money. And that's why more of these models end up out there. I think it's dangerous if we get the DLC route. I don't think it'll happen, but at the same point, the door is slightly opened. It's slightly ajar at this point.
Well, I mean, we're kind of seeing it in a sense when you take a look at a title that I absolutely love, Life is Strange. It's available on mobile now, the original Life is Strange series. You have to buy it per episode, just like you had to on the PC. Everything else, you either bought the full title when it first came out, console is separate. You buy the first episode and you prepay for the next 4, or you buy them individually as they come out. For mobile, it's being rolled out one episode at a time. I believe I think all five are out now, but when it first started coming out, I think it was about a year and a half, 2 years ago on mobile, it was kind of big. Like it's literally five games that you're paying for. I think the episode prices were like, I think it was something high too, like $10 an episode. Now, granted, they were able to make that graphical switch to mobile and it looked great, looked just as good as it did on PC. But essentially, that is a DLC. That's essentially extending the story for another premium. Instead of a full game for one price, you're paying five times for five episodes. So it's kind of interesting. And people are doing it. People are buying it. People love playing Life is Strange, you know, that kind of game on a mobile device. Now, personally, I don't think I could do it. I think it takes away from the experience overall in general. But it's great that that story is being pushed out to another segment of the population. But also, that is one of the more expensive games out there. But Joey, like you said, it's kind of trickling down what you just said with the whole DLC thing.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even realize that. I think I knew it was on mobile, but didn't realize they released it that way. So on PC, something like that makes sense. You're paying $10 an episode or whatever you're paying around that range, and that adds up to what we see as a total game cost around $60, right? Something around there is what we're looking at?
Yeah, and I think like if you actually, like I pre-purchased everything Life is Strange. I think it's actually closer to like $49.95 if you prepay for everything. So you do get a discount if you commit to the entire game. But for people who may not be used to that kind of game, maybe you want to buy one episode at a time.
See, and that makes sense on console or on PC. But now when you're looking at mobile games, you're talking, I don't know, $10, $9.99 is a premium. Most of your games that are paid around $1.99 to $3.99. If you're looking at $10 an episode, you're looking at console/PC game prices on mobile. So like you said, John, that does dip a bit into that DLC universe where we could eventually see more DLC stuff headed to mobile. So it crosses that border. I don't know if I want to see, but Life is Strange is quite the franchise to do it.
I'm pulling it up right now on the App Store because I do want to get an accurate pricing here because I feel like putting Life is Strange, the first thing that pops up is the new Harry Potter game. I will admit that is strange. Life is Strange.
Dun, 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 dun.
Actually, it might be free.
Oh,
that's huge. Hold on, only compatible on everyone says blah 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 blah. Now there's in-app purchases. I'm kind of curious as to what the in-app purchase would be. It's probably the next episodes. Maybe they give you the first episode for free. Maybe they're trying to get you hooked.
That might be it.
And then you have to purchase the other episodes. I'm not going to download it because it is a quite girthy game for mobile. And I'm switching to the iPhone 11 here this Friday, so I don't want to have to worry about that. But yeah, so interesting thought, Joey.
Well, sir, our next topic is finger-licking good. KFC is launching an official anime dating simulator featuring Colonel Sanders. Yes, that giant man who holds the KFC bucket is heading to your nearest dating simulator. John, are you going to get your hands greasy with this one?
No. This is so, so weird. First off, Colonel Sanders is always portrayed as some, like, old guy in his 80s, it feels like. And now we're giving him the full anime treatment. We're giving him the full chibi treatment almost here. Getting his own dating simulator where he looks like, you know, someone who's right around that 18, maybe 19-year-old range, but has all white hair and a goatee.
He did drop about 250 pounds, too, it looks like, for that
probably
shot.
Probably closer to 400 pounds. But yeah, that typical slim anime body shape, everything design that you see in most animes and most anime dating simulators. This is so weird. Like, I can appreciate Wendy's roasting people on Twitter. I can appreciate Popeye's dropping a chicken sandwich that has people all over the country going absolutely crazy for some stupid reason. I can appreciate that. But a dating simulator for KFC, that's just weird. I mean, what's next? Chick-fil-A creating a Christian rock band? It's so weird because it feels like these chains are trying to find some way to be relevant outside of the fact that they're just fast food restaurants. And it's very Joey, I am probably going to download this and play it once because I am dying to see how awful this game is really what it's coming down to.
Well, John, included in your date with Colonel Sanders, you will also meet 9 characters.
Oh, God.
There will be secret endings involved, cooking battles, and multiple hours of playthrough. So
hours?
Yeah.
Are hours of playthrough? There's hours to this game?
Persona 5, KFC edition.
No, this is literally the anime Food Wars as a dating app. Like with the the cooking battles, and I don't like this. I don't like this at all. If anyone actually does play hours worth of this game, hit me up on Twitter. I'm kind of curious as to why you wasted so much time playing this. It is so weird. Why is KFC doing this? Like, I understand that they've dipped into esports. I get it, but this is so weird. Joey, are you going to date Colonel Sanders?
No, but the puns that are coming to mind right now are amazing. The problem is we did not label the stream mature, so most of them are going to have to stay up there for now.
Very crispy, sir.
I mean, just imagine the different things you could do with sides.
No.
Anyway.
No, you can keep the gravy off the mashed potatoes of that one.
I do not plan on dating Colonel Sanders, even if it is virtually. It's just not quite on my agenda for the near future, if ever. But, John, if you want to download, I would be more than willing to watch a stream of you playing.
No. Oh, God. You know what? That would be an entertaining stream, I'm not going to lie, because I would probably just rip apart this game the entire time. I swear, if I get emotionally attached to any character and they die because they choke on chicken or something like that, I'm going to be so ticked off. I don't know. Like, it's these kind of games that will catch you off guard, and you're just like, "Oh, I'm going to this game thing. It's gonna be absolute crap." And like, you're 3 hours into it, and you're like, "Oh my God, is Colonel Sanders gonna find the lost chicken? Oh no!" This is so bad.
I think the funniest part about this whole thing is, as a marketing campaign, this is brilliant.
Oh yeah,
this thing is being talked about so much on social media. Not to mention the food. It has that anime style look, and it actually looks pretty decent. I'm not a big fried chicken guy, but when I see this game, like, you start to feel that little tingle in the back of your throat. Not for Colonel Sanders, but for fried chicken. Let's just clarify that right now. Before that gets taken. I should have thought through that one a little quicker. It's interesting. This is, to my knowledge, the first of its kind, though. I will give them credit on that. It's creative. Personally, I think I would use my creativity in a little different way. Maybe come up with a new KFC meal or something. But if you want to do this dating simulator, go for it, KFC. All the power to you. We're heading down a dark timeline of crazy type of games. But maybe Apple Arcade will have this, John. Maybe you can get it on your subscription to Apple Arcade.
No, 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 no. I will never eat at KFC ever again.
Well, maybe you'll head to Japan and check out Osaka, because they are getting a massive esports-themed hotel. I am stoked for this, Sean. I put the post to the article in our notes, and there's just a couple pictures. It looks like they have 3 up so far. But next April, an esports-themed hotel will open in Osaka's Geek District, and there's no way I'm going to try to pronounce that. It looks cool. From the pictures, it looks like a cyber esports type of cafe. But it looks like they even have the gaming station set up in the rooms. So, and the room looks a little trippy to me. It looks a little bit more funhousey than I think I'd want personally. But I do like the idea that they have a social cafe in the hotel, but they also have more secluded areas. And in particular, I think this goes really well for someone looking to maybe boot camp as an esports team, with a lot more competitions coming up in Japan now, with the government really supporting it much more. I think this opens up a lot of potential for future tournaments being hosted there.
I hope, looking at these pictures, the rooms do not look like this. That is a straight up zebra stripe room from the ceiling to the walls to the floor.
It looks like a fun house, doesn't it? And it's got mirrors and everything.
Awful. I don't have vertigo, but I feel like I'm going to get vertigo if I stay in this room. It is so trippy. I think it's cool that you have the gaming PCs in the room. That's cool. It has a gaming zone. It has what looks like is a smaller esports stage, if you will, that a crowd can sit and watch at. It looks cool, Joey. I might book a trip back to Osaka. It's been a while since I've been to Japan. I will probably want to try to stay here, but also just those rooms look, one, incredibly small, two, horribly designed, and three, I'm getting nauseous just looking at it with all the black and white stripes going on in that entirety of that room. I really hope it's not just zebra striped. The good news is, let's see, hold on. Okay, no, I take that back. I misread that. There is no word on how much it's going to cost per night. I can imagine it's probably going to be expensive. It's such a niche kind of thing. It's going to attract and really warrant that demand for that high price point. So I see this being very expensive.
Right, and I think it can work in Asian culture. I don't know if this works outside of Asia just yet. I don't think esports or gaming is big enough on I would say mainstream level. It seems much more mainstream and popular in Asia, at least from my experience. Coming over to the U.S., I don't know if I see this hotel being successful, but I love the fact it's starting over in Japan, including the basement shower area to give a few more specs, as you call them. The hotel is 9 stories, so we're looking at a shower floor and then 9 stories. Following the shower floor, there'll be 3 gaming floors, and there's going to be about 70 high-spec PCs that are streaming ready as well, gaming PCs, on those floors. And then up above that, floor 4 to 8 are going to be sleeping cabins, with floor 7 and above with in-room gaming PCs. So overall, it looks cool. Some of the designs, like John said, the one room looks like a zebra. I don't know if that differs from room to room or if that's the whole design, but it is kind of trippy out there. I feel like a clown would come out of my closet, so not quite about that life, but floors 2 through 3 or 2 through 4, whatever I said for the gaming, look pretty sweet.
If you see a red balloon in those rooms, Joey, do not grab the red balloon. Don't do it.
So we'll see if we head to Osaka, but it won't be anytime soon. They got to get that thing built before we even consider it, or at least me. I'm excited, though. I'm excited more than anything to see how this does, and in particular to see more esports competitions go to Japan, with the country being much more welcome to it now. I think this really opens up the door to have more events and more major events at that in Osaka. Weekly esport gaming updates. Call of Duty, the Modern Warfare Open Beta, is set to kick off with early access on September 19th. If you are into that code, if you are into Call of Duty, go ahead and check that out. Additionally, over to Apex Legends, TSM is your Apex Legends preseason invitational champions. Hopefully that's a little bit of a consolation for that organization after missing out on League of Legends Worlds this year.
It's not.
Ouch.
It's not. TSM.
But I do like this. I do like the fact we do see Apex continuing to build out its competitive scene. Much like Fortnite, it was a little bit rocky at the beginning, but it does look like they're starting to find some footing here in esports. So I'm excited to see this scene continue to build out with this preseason competition kicking things off. Overwatch League. So we are making our way through Overwatch League playoffs. John, what are we up to now?
All right, so the finals are set. Philadelphia, like I said at the top of the show, you are on the clock. It is time to shine, East Coast, because we have our final two teams. Not really that big of a surprise for a lot of people here. The Titans, who have kind of taken the entirety of Season 2 by storm, assembling a massive roster, taking Season 2 by storm, they have punched their ticket into the finals as well. And Joey, they have the talent. They may have struggled from time to time, but they've been an absolute force in Overwatch ever since a certain player turned 18 years of age and was eligible to actually play. The San Francisco Shock, yes, NRG, who has a Chicago-based Call of Duty team now, is going to Philadelphia to take on the Titans of Vancouver. I believe a week from this weekend, Joey, we are going to have a new champion in Overwatch League. Unfortunately, London, not going to be able to repeat. We're going to have a new champion in Season 2.
Yes, sir. And that is going to be Sunday, September 29th for that exciting matchup, like John said, in Philly. Early predictions, John. Who are you taking? Because I actually have no idea.
Oh, so this is going to be tough. So the New York Excelsior, surprise, they choked in the playoffs. San Francisco looks good. They are on an absolute tear. They have 4-0'd their last three teams. That is the LA Gladiators, 4-0. That is the Spark 4-0, and that is the New York Excelsior, shocker, 4-0. They are an absolute tear. The Titans just barely defeated the New York Excelsior 4-3 in a best-of-seven matchup. I'm going to take the shock. I think the talent is there. I think the skill level is there. I think the team coordination is there. I like San Francisco to take this. I do think it's going to go at least six games. It may go full seven, but I'm going to take it in six, 4-2 in favor. The early prediction in favor of San Francisco.
Yeah, I'm going to go San Francisco as well. I've been leaning that way for a little while. I think their team has shown more resilience in stage four than we saw from Vancouver. At the same point, I do have to give Vancouver credit. I think their pathway to playoffs was much easier. Like you said, the Shock had some 4-0s here, but it was against the Gladiators. It was against the Hangzhou Spark. Over on the other side, Vancouver, yeah, they went seven games, but they went seven games against arguably one of the top teams in the whole league. That, to me, makes it sound like Vancouver's a little better than people are giving them credit for. At the same point, I will take the Shock to win out, but I do think we go almost a full series, to be completely honest. I think this will be a nail-biter to the end.
It's going to be exciting.
Speaking of exciting, Worlds. We now know all of the teams for Worlds this upcoming year. We have a whole lot of regions, so we can jump around a bit here. LCS North America, we have Team Liquid, your boys Cloud9, and Clutch Gaming representing. We did know this one for a couple weeks now. Any additional thoughts on the LCS teams? I think you got a pretty good group going over.
I think this is a very solid group. Team Liquid's roster is built for international competition. Now we're going to see if they can put that, you know, money where their mouth is. If all this hype, if all this money Steve has spent in the offseason acquiring top-notch players like Jensen to kind of be that missing link. Team Liquid did not perform well at all last year. They are, in fact, quite a big disappointment last year. A lot of pressure is going to be on them with some of the power names they have on that roster. Doublelift needs to show up in Worlds. Impact, can he return to his former world champion self in Worlds? Cloud9, the only North American team to really be consistent at Worlds last year, making it all the way to the Final Four. Can Cloud9 do it again? A lot of question marks there as well. They don't have Jensen. Clutch Gaming, Hooney. Hooney in the top lane, the only player to make it to Worlds in three different regions. That is a great story. Clutch has been playing out of their mind lately. They did incredibly well in the Gauntlet. They deserve to be there. I don't think they're going to make it out of groups. It really does depend upon the draw. I think Team Liquid and Cloud9 are going to be your best hopes for NA.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I do want to say, though, that the LCS, with that third seed being Clutch Gaming, I think is a stronger third seed than they went last year. You look at 100 Thieves, they had some talent on that team, but I don't think they were really ready for Worlds, in my humble opinion. And if you watched any Worlds, you'd probably agree with me. Clutch Gaming, I think, comes in. I don't know if they advance out of group stage, but I do think they're going to bring a little bit more momentum with Hooney in the top lane. Like you mentioned, he's been around. He's world-class. They have very talented players on the roster. If they continue to form each other and get to know each other better here and there, mechanically speaking, I think they're good enough to take a few games. I don't know if I see them moving on to advance, though. Team Liquid and Cloud9 definitely have the opportunity to. Over to the LEC, Fnatic locked down the second seed, taking down Splice 3-0, and then Splice ran the rest of the gauntlet with that win. So we have G2 Esports, Fnatic, and Splice representing EU. These were the three teams we predicted. I'm not super surprised. This is going out on a limb a bit, but I think G2 Esports and Fnatic are both in my top 10. I would honestly say they're both coming in right around top 5 for Worlds this year. EU looks extremely strong. They look great at MSI. Fnatic has taken the MSI champion G2 to 5-game series the last three times. I really think that these two teams could go semifinals. I think there's tons of potential as long as they keep their mental game strong. G2 Esports and Fnatic have a lot of potential. Splice, I think they have potential to sneak out of a group, but I think it's going to be a lot more challenging for them.
I think the LEC is the Western world's best hope. Joey, like you said, they are incredibly strong. They performed incredibly well in international competition. They have absolutely dominated the LCS. That's coming from an LCS, you know, fanboy. I think they're going to be the best hope for the Western teams here. I like Fnatic. I like G2 a lot. I think Splice, by far, you know, they're not third for any reason. They are probably the weaker EU team here, the LEC team to come out of Europe. But that's not a knock against them. They played against some amazing competition. They have demonstrated that they deserve this third seed coming out of the LEC. And I feel like they have an opportunity to make it out of the group stage. I really do. Again, all really depends upon their seeding and how they get drawn into the groups and everything. but I like Splice going into this. Three really strong European teams going into Worlds.
And then jumping over to Asia, LCK for South Korea, SK Telecom, T1, Griffin, and Damwon Gaming. All three of these teams extremely talented, John. We've seen it year after year. Korea brings contenders. South Korea's SKT in particular is stacked. I mean, you look at their backups. Their backups are better than a lot of NA teams in general. I mean, South Korea is just such a strong region. SKT with a very strong team. Griffin also extremely talented. I wouldn't sleep on any of these LCK teams. I would never sleep on any LCK teams. At the same point, I think EU is going to come challenge them, but I think LCK sent three great teams.
Yeah, LCK is going to be tough. SKT really bouncing back from a really kind of disappointing year last year. And really, they struggled this year, too, for quite a bit. They did bounce back as well. SKT still has Faker. It's going to be tough. You know, Korea and the LCK really put up amazing teams. Regardless if they're first seed, second seed, or third seed, they are going to be absolutely tough. And they're going to go in as the favorites.
And to run down the rest of the teams here, do not sleep on the LMS either. We have J-Team, AHQ Esports Club, and Hong Kong Attitude. I believe all three of those are returning this year, if I remember correctly. Over in the LPL for China, we have Fun Plus Phoenix, Royal Never Give Up, and Invictus Gaming, the returning champions coming in through that third seed. In VCS, we have GAM Esports and Low Key Esports. While we move on to our wildcard regions, you have some familiar faces in here as well. CBLOL, Flamengo Esports, LCL, John, the return of the Unicorns of Love. How about that? Did not make it into the LEC once franchising came around, but they have found their way back to the Worlds, and they are looking to throw their little unicorn horn into the mix and try to make some noise. Unicorns of Love is just one of those really fun organizations to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Really excited to see them back in the scene. Granted, they did it through Russia, which was a little unexpected. But really cool to see that organization kind of bouncing back after not getting back into the LEC. So super cool to see the Unicorns of Love back in action.
And then over in Japan, one of the teams I would not sleep on, one of my dark horses, Detonation Focus Me is back. They looked pretty good last year in the play-ins. I expect this team to make some noise in play-ins again this year. Over in the LLA, we have Azurus Gaming, the OPL Team Mammoth, LST Mega, and then last but definitely not least, TCL Ascending Royal Youth. All 24 teams will look to prove themselves at Worlds. Again, we will have that play-in stage like usual, and I'm not 100% sure of those details off the top of my head yet, but there will be a play-in stage where seeds will be given, and then from there they will be seeded into the main pools of Worlds where the major competition will take place. John, I'm stoked. I think LCS nowadays has a bit of a chance, but I really do think LEC has the most hope for the West at the moment. Team Liquid, Cloud9, you have Splice, you have Clutch. There's a lot of really talented teams, and then obviously Fnatic and G2. There's going to be a lot of noise from the West, and I think once again we might have a chance at sending at least two teams to semifinals.
Going to be super exciting. I am definitely excited for Worlds, but I'm mostly excited for the fact that I'm not going to have to wake up at 3 a.m. to watch these matches. It is being played in Europe. I am super excited that I'm able to watch it at a reasonable time, and I can actually sleep. My sleep schedule is not getting screwed up this year, Joey.
Hey, oh, yeah, last year was hella rough. that was rough. Welcome back to EU. Thank you. What is that, like a... It's probably like a 5 hour difference, six hour difference. Yeah, 5 to 7 probably for most of these. So not too shabby. I am stoked. You are stoked. This should be fun. But that will bring us to the end of this episode. League of Legends, guys, keep an eye out because those pool drawings will be soon.
Well, Nation, that will do it for this episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, there's other ways that you can interact with us and the show. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, you can find us streaming regularly on Twitch, the podcast Monday nights around 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time, twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level Up.